Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archive. I have about 80 different shows that I've done since I began this show back in January of 2012. Last week, I had a great interview with director Paul Osborne for his movie called Favor, a thriller. It was a great movie. Make sure to check out that interview. Before that, I had an interview with actress Harley Jane Kozak, who's known for films like Arachnophobia, also Parenthood with Steve Martin. You might remember that film. She's been in a lot of soap operas like Guiding Light, my favorite soap opera, and Santa Barbara, as well as others. She's been around for many, many years, and she went from being an actress to being an author and has written a series of mystery novels. So we had a chance to talk about both of those worlds, and it was quite an interesting conversation about both industries. Well, today I'm interviewing a publisher, Danforth Prince. He's the president and founder of Blood Moon Productions, and he will be talking about their newest book, Those Glamorous Gabor Sisters, Bombshells from Budapest, and some of his other projects. And I think I have him on the line. Let me check here. Danforth, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Rachel. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, thank you for being on the show today.
It's a great honor to be here. Thank you.
Yes. Well, before we get to talking about the Gabors, I wanted to ask you how you got into the publishing world.
Oh, how nice of you, and how nice. Hello, Florida. I'm looking forward to all this. This is fun. I've been exposed, and I've been working within the publishing industry for 40 years. God, time goes by so quickly. I was a writer at the Frommer Travel Guides. I worked with Darwin Porter on producing the Europe series for Frommer. We did the creative copy and the text and the organization for many, many, many of those guides. We ended up doing 50 of those titles.
Wow.
And they had annual updates or biannual updates. And to make it clear, there were spinoffs. We got the contract for Frommer's France, for example, and that evolved into a contract for Frommer's Paris, and that involved later a contract for Frommer's Provence and the Riviera. So I was really working in publishing in a capacity of the then hot industry called the travel industry. Now, since the recession, the travel industry has really dried up a lot. The Frommer guides are not the organization they were. I think they've been discontinued. They may be resuscitated later.
Wow.
I think they exist in internet form. They're not publishing a lot of the old guides. I'm not with them anymore.
Wow.
The travel empire has been dissolved, a terrible blow. Ask anybody in the travel industry. But what I found when I was wandering around the travel landscape with Frommer was that a lot of stories were being stored by Europeans that Darwin Porter, as the chief author of the Frommer Guides, would interview people in showbiz. And anytime you wandered off to write a story on Frommer's Sweden, the Swedish tourist office would trot out whatever celebrity was living in the environs of Stockholm. That's how we met Ingrid Bergman, among many others. So my point is that my publishing life evolved from an industry that is no longer really existing the way it used to, the travel industry. And it was in the process of 30 years of association with the Frommer Guides, where the Frommer Guides had been picked up by publishers that included Prentice Hall and Simon & Schuster and Paramount Publishing and something, the early origins, the Frommer Pasmantir Company. I was deeply involved in media in some way or another. How did the present Blood Moon Productions get evolved from all this? Well, when you're in Paris on a cold Tuesday in March and the wind is blowing and the mud is spattering over your windshield and you're late for an appointment, you want to talk about something other than the travel stuff at hand. So always the discussion with me and Darwin Porter when we were writing these Frommer guides came up about old movie stars and the disconnect between the public perception as proposed by, as promoted by the Hollywood machine, and the reality as promoted by the people who are living in Hollywood, talking the vibe and fooling around emotionally or sexually with the various movie stars. So I think the existence of Blood Moon is a result of the talent of my main writer, who is Darwin Porter, and I'd like to talk about him in just a moment. If you will
let's talk about him. How did you hook up with Darwin? How did you get involved? You said you got into the Frommer industry. Now, from that, did you and Darwin form a friendship and kind of branch out on your own into Blood Moon?
Darwin had too many contracts with the Frommer Guides, and he wasn't being served by his staff. I wandered into the landscape when I was, I think, 30 in 1982. And I think I fired the whole research staff and took over all the research capacities for Darwin. And we ended up writing some travel guides together, including Frommer's Switzerland, Frommer's Hungary, Frommer's Austria, and a lot of the guys of the Caribbean. So he needed a helper. So I became that helper, and together we maneuvered our way through the travel industry and the publishing scene associated with the Frommer guys, and we did a bang-up job, and we became the best-known writers in the whole travel industry. We were the most widely read and the most widely published travel writers in the history of publishing. Now, the Frommer Guides don't exist anymore, so just a word about what Darwin did before he did the Frommer Guides, and with the understanding that the Frommer Guides give you a lot of opportunities to meet movie stars. He was always on the road. We were always on the road meeting these showbiz vital players of today, or, forgive me, has-beens of yesterday with axes to grind, who would tell stories about that did not necessarily parallel the mainstream wisdom as put out by the Hollywood studio system.
Mm-hmm.
If we have any success at Blood Moon at all, it's because our books really do challenge the common wisdom as promoted by the entertainment industry about how they want their movie stars to be packaged. Now, getting on track with Blood Moon, please. Darwin Porter did a lot of stuff before he did the Frommer Guides, and this is long before I met Darwin. Darwin Porter was a Florida man. He was the bureau chief at the Miami Herald in Key West. He was head of the student body at the University of Miami. He met an awful lot of people, and in his capacity as bureau chief of the Key West Bureau of the Miami Herald, he met, for example, the whole Tennessee Williams crowd. Every artist in America was going down to Key West back then. Darwin was in charge of writing them all up for the Miami Herald. He would cover entertainers back when Miami was challenging Las Vegas as the entertainment capital of the world. He would meet an awful lot of people. He later met Jolie Gabor, and he met Greta Keller, who moved into his house in New York, who were sources for the Gabor book, certainly. And they, Greta Keller lived at his house in New York. Greta Keller was a chanteuse who had been important in the Weimar Republic, with tons and tons of stories about the Gabor sisters. So my point is that Darwin had always known a lot of celebrities. He had grown up with celebrities. His mother was the helper, the girl Friday, to Sophie Tucker, last of the Red Hot Mamas. So my point is that smart journalists in the Sputnik age were collecting off-color stories, irreverent stories about everybody from the Kennedys to movie stars. It was a complete disconnect between what they were allowed to publish in their newspapers and what was actually happening in the rough-and-tumble world of the entertainment industry. And our goal at Blood Moon is to take these, we call them oral histories, and publish them with library indexes for a new generation of readers. We maintain that we can do this now because 40 or 50 years have passed since the original acts, and it indeed takes about 50 years for a historical movement to become more understood, more clearly understood. So we're doing a bang-up job and really creating a body of books which really does amplify, we say, America's understanding of its own roots through its entertainment industry, which has always had a skewed presentation through the media machines of Hollywood. We're trying to present a more realistic overview of what was really going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the Gabor sisters.
Yes, you said that he knew Jolie.
And now, how do you go about, I know you said you're a helper with the research, how do you help with the research? How do you find all of these tidbits, not just the oral histories, you know, how do you track these people down? How do you get pictures? What is your process for doing that?
Well, the process begins with a series of anecdotes and gossipy points of view about the Gabor sisters. And our points of view about the Gabor sisters were always that they are cult icons waiting to be celebrated. I think Zsa Zsa, who is very elderly, we wish her well, we love her. I have stories about that. Zsa Zsa is really an under-celebrated pop icon who really does, in many ways, represent aspects of the Sputnik age, the mink coats, the diamonds, the glitter, the high heels, roles when gender roles were more clearly defined, morality was a lot stricter, at least on the surface. So Zsa Zsa, you begin a book like this with the point of view of the cultural importance of the Gabors, And then you begin, you continue through interviewing a lot of people. And when you are the author of Frommer's Austria and Frommer's Hungary, and you're trotted out all the social dragons of Vienna or Budapest, presented to you, of course, by the tourist board or through personal friendships that he had before, they have a lot of stories, a lot of points of view about the Gabors. Now, the Gabors are unusual in that if you talk to the man in the street who happened to have met one of them for one fleeting, illuminating moment, a flash of cognizance, if you like, everybody has a strong memory of when they met one of the Gabors. I think in Florida, people have already phoned me with a memory, a meeting, a point of view about that individual meeting. What I think is noteworthy is that very few people have an overview of how they got to be the personalities they are, and that's what our book tries to illuminate, or really does illuminate, better than anything that's ever been published before. And it's very easy to put out a book on the Gabors and focus just on the camp aspect. There's a few books that do that. I maintain we don't need to emphasize the camp aspect of the Gabors because there's tons of people out there who will do it for us better than we could. But there is no comprehensive overview of the time that they spent in Europe, and that was carefully researched through dialogues with, among others, Jolie Gabor, who was a friend of Greta Keller, who lived in Darwin's house in New York City with Darwin for 3 years during her period in America. And Greta Keller was a chanteuse who was famous. A lot of people knew Greta. She knew everybody in Europe. She knew the social scene in Europe, a rigid allegiance to the social etiquette of the Weimar Republic. Stories about she was actually Adolf Hitler's favorite singer, and she had to escape in the middle of the night on a flight to Amsterdam when it was discovered that she was a percentage Jewish, and she would have been thrown into a concentration camp. It would have been viewed as a personal betrayal of the Nazi hierarchy if her origins had been discovered. So that's how she came to America. A lot of artistic players in the Weimar Republic did end up in Los Angeles, as did Zsa Zsa, meeting one another, sharing key elements of their creative process with one another, and Zsa Zsa was in the midst of that, being a cultural icon, and everybody knew Zsa Zsa, and everybody had a story about her afterwards. So the challenge is collating these anecdotes, amplifying it with the subplots of the Gabor's life, for example, gossip on the set of a particular movie she made, like what was really going on when she was filming, for example, Moulin Rouge in London and in Paris in 1952 or 53. So a tapestry can be woven with these personal interviews and with amplifications of the settings in which Zsa Zsa operated throughout the course of her illustrious career.
Mm-hmm. Now, some have compared this trio to the modern-day Kardashians, that they're famous for being famous. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
Well, with great respect to the Kardashians, I don't think they're as interesting as the Gabors. I mean, I don't think they're as interesting, but I don't think modern movie stars are as interesting as the antique ones. Maybe that's a function of my own age. But the times in which the Gabors lived were the absolute apogee of what I call the American Empire, during the center of what I call the American Century, when presuppositions about the unlimited power, culturally and politically and economically, of the United States was really pumping a lot of jet fuel into the culture. So to me, these women, the Gabors, were hanging out with uber luminaries who affected the course of human destiny. I don't think the Kardashians are getting invitations quite as interesting as what the Gabors used to get.
And for those that have lived under a rock and don't know much about the Gabor sisters, maybe you can give a brief little description of some of the highlights of each of their careers so people know a little tidbit about what they did.
Oh, nice. And we're presenting this, by the way, at the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival on October 15th. That's this upcoming Tuesday.
Yeah.
A brief overview of their lives, and an honor it is indeed to bring this product to people so hip to the movie industry. I think the way that I like to view the Gabors is it's a story of displacement and diaspora. People have tragedies or horrors or traumas inflicted upon them, and then the rubber hits the road, and they have to determine who they really are. And in the case of the Gabors, these amazing, cultured, artistically sensitive women from good bourgeoisie lines Jolie was a matriarch of major status, a social player in Budapest and Vienna, active in the art scene, knew all the players in the artistic scene of Hungary and Budapest of her era. They find themselves in the new world with no money and maybe a mink coat and maybe some jewelry that we're able to smuggle out, and then begins the drama. I think that in this country where things are changing so quickly, all of us should be alert to who we may have to become if our environment mm-hmm. changes radically.
Yeah.
We know how delicate things are out there politically. This kind mm-hmm. of wrenching change might happen to any of us the way it did to the Gabors. So mm-hmm. I always have been fascinated by the way that these women who were trained in the social rituals of the Habsburgs, they knew how to write thank you letters, they knew how to dress, they knew how to talk, they knew how to make small talk, they knew how to charm people. They had formidable conversational skills, especially Zsa Zsa, by the way. And mm-hmm. how do you take a product like that and take it off not only to the new world but to Hollywood? And I think that the success in Hollywood, although they did remain B actresses. I don't think even Ava, the best of them in terms of being an actress, ever really rose above being a B-list actress and an A-list personality, might I say, and an icon who everyone adores. I think that a lot of their success in that stemmed from their ability to self-satirize in public. You can go on the computer and find long lists of Zsa Zsa-isms, of things that she said, like, I never hated a man enough not to return his diamonds at the end of the affair, she used to say, or or things like, I'm a wonderful housekeeper, at the end of the marriage I always get to keep the house, she used to say. And this kind of thing was said in the middle of talk shows in the 60s or the late 50s on Jack Parr and on Merv Griffin, Ava, and mm-hmm. especially Merv Griffin, but as early as Jack Parr. And this was an era when no one was making fun of the sanctity of marriage, and people heard this and would just explode into hysterical laughter that these were women who were more than just gorgeous beyond belief, and their physical beauty is a tribute to Hungary, by the way. But they had charm and they had wit, and everybody who met one of them remembered them forever for qualities that went way, way, way beyond their beauty and their looks.
Mm-hmm.
So I view the story of the Gabors as Habsburgundian protocol comes to the new world and goes viral. If you like. Mm-hmm. And I'm also very surprised that I, Dan Prince, am in the position of being the world's foremost promoter of the Gabors, it seems. It seems that I am a one-man uh-huh. army whose destiny it seems to be promoting the virtues of these particular Sputnik-era movie stars. And I think that's a huge joke from God, if you like, a huge joke of the irony of my own personal experience. And, of course, I always rush to say that I grew up in a very Zsa Zsa-centric household in Toledo, Ohio. And it was an environment far removed from the arts scene. Toledo, Ohio, in the mm-hmm. middle 50s, were not exactly a chic, art-scotches kind of place. With huge respect and love for my parents, my family, and all that. But I remember sitting down.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
Not at all. Oh, well, anyway, we named our dog Zsa Zsa. Our spaniel was named Zsa Zsa. And the dog would follow me on my paper route, and I would yell for Zsa Zsa, who'd followed me without a leash. I would yell for Zsa Zsa, and Zsa Zsa would come trotting along, carrying a paper in her mouth, very well trained. And the neighbors would laugh. And I always thought because she was so well trained, but actually it was because of the name I associated with Zsa Zsa. And then when my mother was depressed in the course of her marriage, my mother, I'm afraid, was depressed, very sad, actually. But whenever she got depressed, she would buy something, and she once bought a cocktail wrap in the style of Zsa Zsa. And I heard Zsa Zsa on a Jack Parr show when I was fascinated. I didn't even know where Europe was. And I heard this exotic woman with cleavage and diamonds and glittery and making fun of sacred cows. And I adored her from the beginning. So I, as publisher of this book, must confess that I am Zsa Zsa-philiac. I adore Zsa Zsa, her memory, her image. I wish her so, so well. Other people adore Ava, by the way. Magda is the least mm-hmm. understood of the three, and I think our book really illuminates the very fascinating saga of Magda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you touch on all three in your book. And
well, it is a triple biography. Yeah, it's a triple
right,
play biography
exactly.
With a lot with if there's a fourth character who is in this, it's Jolie, the glue and that binds them together, the matriarch, the aggressive matriarch, the iron steel hand within a velvet glove matriarch, who, when she was trying to teach her children independence, she took them to the lake Balaton, the largest freshwater body of water in Europe. It's within Hungary. It's Hungary's inland sea, and she took them out in a rowboat and threw them out of the boat and made them swim. Now, other parents have done this, but Jolie had that style of teaching her daughters to prepare for the adversity to come, and how clever she was to have done it.
No, I'm going to be mentioning again the tribute at the end of the show, but I wanted to also just touch real briefly on some of your other projects. You wrote a book about Linda Lovelace, which is totally different, but maybe not so much. She's known for her porn performance in Deep Throat, of course, and the thing that links the two together is the effect on society. You talked a little bit about this effect or the part of the culture that the Gabor sisters played. But I know you also mentioned in your Linda Lovelace book about the effect and the rise of femininity,
I could certainly babble
about
that.
Tell me a little bit about that.
I'd love to. That's very nice. I realize the degree to which it's an odd pairing to link the Gabor sisters with Linda Lovelace, and I'm sure that no one in the history of media has ever even conceived of them being compared together. Unless you, of course, want to make a lot of jokes about it all, that the idea that I am escorting both Linda and Zsa Zsa to Florida for this book tour coming up amuses me vastly.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, am I man enough to do this? And I think at the end of the experience, I am honored and thrilled to be the person who introduces these two amazing women to a greater consciousness within the Florida reading community or entertainment community. Now, the fact that they're linked together by my tour is merely a function of our publishing schedule. We released the world's most comprehensive biography of Linda Lovelace and her saga on Deep Throat in March or April. And we did that as a calculated choice to have it come out simultaneously with the movie called Lovelace that was not released, by the way, until August. It was 6 months late and caused us a bit of consternation. We said we were on time. Why weren't they?
Welcome to Hollywood.
And our belief was that the movie Lovelace with Amanda Seyfried and Peter Sarsgaard would raise the bar on public awareness to the new generation about who Linda Lovelace was, and consequently our book would be the written definitive version of the Linda Lovelace saga. Now, everybody, we took a survey at my gym, very informal, and it's LA Fitness in South Staten Island. It's a top working class gym. My belief is that if you can do a sales idea to the crowd at that gym and it flies, you can do it to anyone in the country and it'll fly. So I ran around the gym talking to people I don't know very well and asking them their memories of the first time seeing that movie, Deep Throat, and almost everyone over 40 remembered it with the same clarity that they remembered the assassination of JFK. And a lot of people under 40 or under 30 maybe didn't know a thing about Linda Lovelace. And when I began to mention the movie Deep Throat, they immediately thought that I was propositioning them, and one girl got very huffy and very mad at me. The Linda Lovelace book derived as follows. Here we go. Linda Lovelace's famous movie was made in 1973, Deep Throat. It went everywhere. It was made a cheap porno quickie made for, I think, $25,000, supported by the mob. It enlivened, it catalyzed discussions about censorship in the arts. It catalyzed the Nixon administration into censorship legalities under Edwin Meese, the attorney general. Everybody saw the movie. A lot of celebrities were proud to be seen entering and leaving movie theaters where Deep Throat was being shown. Barbara Walters and Jackie Kennedy and Lee Radziwill and Truman Capote all proudly trekked off to a local movie theater to see this brief, I guess an hour, 15-minute quickie porno movie, wherein Linda's sexual specialty of the moment, which was the fellatio experience she became so famous for giving to a lot of movie stars, by the way, which is brought out in our book. So we argue that if you are writing a history of entertainment in the United States in the 20th century, you must include a detailed chapter on Deep Throat and its political and sociological and anthropological ramifications to have a complete overview of what really we owe a lot to Linda. So we've done two comprehensive biographies of two women who are both celebrities and in very different ways. We have the most detailed biography of the Gabors on the world market today from Blood Moon, and we have the most detailed overview of not only Linda Lovelace, but the saga associated with her personal trip through the cesspools and hells of the degradation that she suffered as a, and let's talk about that, as a fetish performer in Florida at the beginning, a subject who was later endorsed by the feminists as a role model who became an anti-porn crusader with all of the hypocritical associations that, that go with that. Many of her porn colleagues laughed at her and scorned her for eventually turning her back on porn. And said that she utterly lied about being forced to do porn, but we nonetheless journalistically reported as journalists, as rather dry commentators in the journalistic style. We reported on the full saga of her personal odyssey, her political ramifications, and a lot of anecdotes that she related to. And now here we go. How did this book come about? Linda was invited in 1988 to the editorial offices of a literary agency called the J. Garron Agency, the Garron Brook Agency in Manhattan, to tell her story. And the author, Darwin Porter, was part of the journalistic team there when Linda was talking about her life, the movie stars that she had serviced, the details associated with her encounters with these movie stars. And it was really going to be a tell-all biography that was going to blow the lid off Hollywood. And then came a lawsuit for one of earlier of an earlier book that Linda had had authored or had ghost authored for her. The lawsuit got everyone very, very frightened, and everyone then refused to deal with any of Linda's future projects for fear of litigation, and everyone went home. Now, Linda died, of course, in 2002, and it's been 40 years since the release of the movie in 1973. So with the understanding that many of the principals are dead and the fear of litigation isn't with us anymore, and with the understanding that we could collate all of these anecdotes from everybody who ever had a sexual association with Linda, bragged about it loudly, news of her official life, unofficial life, quirks, exploits, and adventures went all over the place. The author, in addition, was on the Defend Harry Reams Defense Fund. The Nixon administration wanted to punish one of the actors in Deep Throat personally for his role in this. And Darwin Porter was on the Defend Harry Reams Committee. And every liberal in the United States was furious with the way Harry Reams was being prosecuted. Darwin raised some money in New York and Los Angeles for his defense. And in the process, talked to everybody about Linda, and everybody had a story. So we've collated that into the Linda Lovelace book. And the appearance of the Gabors and Linda Lovelace is purely an accident of Blood Moon's editorial calendar. It has nothing to do with any statement we're trying to make about, you know, anything.
Right. Now you're working on another book.
And amusing, and in terms of doing a book tour together, it's great fun. I mean, I'm utterly charmed by this opportunity to at least, what's the word, figuratively or poetically escort these dames through Florida. It's great fun and done with great love and a spirit of great effect. And I really like this South Florida market. People are hip and smart about the entertainment industry. It, in some ways, New York, I mean, South Florida is like an outer borough of New York City where everybody is sort of hip and smart and doesn't do any of the stupid stuff that I get into when I go to less hip regions of America, when someone will stand up in the crowd and condemn me for impugning the virtue of, let's say, Grace Kelly. How dare you sully the image of that pristine white goddess, people will say to me, and I'll say, oy vey, where have you been living? One writer maintained that Grace Kelly was a virgin when she married Prince Rainier of Monaco. And if you'd say that to a whole bunch of people who know about these things, they would laugh and laugh and laugh. I think that Darwin Porter really approaches his writing like a tough, cynical journalist hanging out in a bar with other journalists. And they are comparing the versions of stories which were officially accepted by the media machine of the time, the Hollywood machine, the political machine. They were printing all that stuff, and among one another, they were collating anecdotes about the hypocrisy and the disconnect between the real and the myth. So Blood Moon is not to be provocative. I'm not doing this because I want to get people all riled up. I love the movies. I adore these movie stars. I was as affected by the Hollywood media machine as much as any other American in terms of forming my values and what I believe is important, blah, blah, blah. But in this day and age, it is getting a little tiresome to maintain those old myths about actors being inviolable and inhuman and plastic and the result of the PR machines of the Hollywood studio system. We just don't want to play. We don't want to do our books that way. It's a niche we are filling, but we certainly have other projects in the future, and we would like to continue doing this as long as we possibly can. I think Darwin Porter would like to actually make comments or rewrite the history of Hollywood using the voluminous interviews that he's conducted in his life and his photographic mind, which is extraordinary, to redefine America's assumptions about Hollywood. And as a result, the truth might make us love it even more.
We're actually running out of time already.
Oh, silly me.
that went quick. But I want to mention, you know, if you have a website or anything that you want to give, how people buy your books.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you so much. The key, we've got good distribution. We've been, our creative core has been agreed to be distributed by the National Book Network. And that's quite a trick when you get a major book distributor endorsing your vision. And I think that our role at the Frommer Guides lended credibility to the statements that we're making and our former association with all those big publishing companies. So the books are available everywhere. They're on Amazon. They're at Barnes & Noble. They're, I mean, you type in Linda Lovelace, Blood Moon, and up comes. You type in Zsa Zsa Gabor, Danforth Prince, and up comes a whole series of videos and stuff we've done. So distribution is very good, and we're very grateful to the National Book Network. And we're very grateful to the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival, too, for having me on Tuesday night.
Yes, you'll be there at 6:30 at Cinema Paradiso. We're doing
And by the way, the night after that, there's an event about Linda at the World Erotic Art Museum on Miami Beach. So there's 15 different speaking engagements in the next week that I'll be down in Florida addressing different aspects of the books we do, the effects they have upon the society, how the information was collated. So Tuesday is about the Gabors at Fliff, and Wednesday is about Linda at the World Erotic Art Museum, and that should really be fun. Then there's Books and Books is all of this is on the website at www.bloodmoonproductions, and the schedule of the speaking engagements is there. We've got speeches at 4 gated communities, 2 bookstores, a couple of libraries, the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival, and the World Erotic Art Museum, and a couple more that I forget. But it's all on the website at bloodmoonproductions.com.
You know,
and
when
really
I went to that website,
it really
didn't
fun.
Come up, by the way. You might want to check
your
website, because when I checked your website, it didn't come up. So you might want to double check and make sure it's working.
Oh, you're very kind. We had it rebuilt in the last couple of days. There's been some machinations to that, and it was rebuilt partly to reflect the details associated with this tour. So I'm sorry about problems with that. Please come, everyone. So it's great fun to do this in Florida. Well, thank you very much, Rachel. Thank you very much
welcome.
For your time.
Yes,
and
thank
peace and love
you.
To all
I'm
of
sure
you.
I will
and
be talking to you soon.
I'd like that very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show today, Danvers.
A great honor. Thank you. Bye.
Well, that went by fast. That was a quick interview with Danforth Prince. And like he said, we have the tribute to Zsa Zsa Gabor coming up this Tuesday at 6:30 at Cinema Paradiso, so you can check that out. You can meet him in person. I don't know everything that they're going to be doing that night. I'm sure they'll have a slideshow presentation, like a tribute collage of different films and things that Zsa Zsa's been a part of, something like that. That's usually what Cinema Paradiso does. And then I'm sure he will talk a bit, and I'm sure his books will be available as well. But he's actually won some awards for his Linda Lovelace book. We didn't get a chance to talk about that, which is it's really interesting when you think about the cultural implications of something like that. If you don't look at it on a surface level, you know, about the porn industry, but if you look at the cultural implications of what was going on during the 60s and the rise of the feminist movement, it's kind of interesting, especially when he talks about how people proudly walked into the theater. That was really interesting. But, of course, most of our conversation today was about the Gabors. And for those that love legendary Hollywood, I'm sure they'll love to go to the event on Tuesday and find out more about them. Okay, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in today. And like I said, the film festival's coming up. And it starts officially after Danforth's tribute on the 15th. On the 18th, the film festival starts with a movie called Free Ride, starring Anna Paquin and directed by Shayna Betts. Anna is not going to be able to be with us at the film festival, but the director will be. And Anna's husband, Stephen Moyer, who is also in True Blood, plays Bill with Anna, who, of course, plays Sookie on True Blood. That's how I, you know, think of Anna Paquin, because I'm a True Blood fan. But, of course, she's been in a ton of other things, including The Piano, which I'm a big fan of. But the movie Free Ride is showing on the 18th, and then it's followed by a great party at Steve Savore's house, Villa de Palma. It's a beautiful mansion, and that's a very formal event. Its dress code is very formal and very strict, and you can find out more about those two events on the 18th, as well as all of the films and all of the events and all of the celebrity appearances, et cetera, on the website www.fliff.com. FLIFF.com. In addition, I have revamped my own website, Independent Streak, the website. It's called www.independentstreak.ning, N-I-N-G.com. Kind of a weird name. But on that website, I have information also about the film festival, and I will be posting reviews, more events, those types of things in detail as the festival progresses. Usually during the festival season, I post stuff almost daily, so keep an eye out on that. And, of course, for those that are in the know about the Cinema Paradiso, you might know this. Unfortunately, we lost one of our own over the last couple of days. Jane, who worked at Cinema Paradiso, unfortunately had a heart attack and passed away. And I do have some information about that up on the website as well. So the film festival will be dedicated to Jane, which is a little, you know, very shocking and sad. Okay, guys. Also, please go on to my Facebook site, which is Indie Streak, just like this show. Go on to www.facebook.com/IndieStreak, and I will be posting things about the festival and, of course, about this show on there, too. And if you're a filmmaker out there and you'd like to be on the show, please contact me. My email is ravenprods@yahoo.com. That's ravenprods at yahoo.com. And please follow up with me because right now I'm being bombarded by people that want to get onto the show. So just follow up with me and I'll hopefully bring you on eventually. Okay? In the meantime, check out the archives. And I also want to mention real quickly, I saw an amazing film called Hollow Creek that I don't know exactly what the schedule is going to be like for distribution yet, but this movie blew me away. It starred a lot of people I know, a lot of South Florida actors, and it was directed by somebody right here in South Florida, Gisela Moro. It starred Stephen Darren, a friend of mine, and also my friend Alan Darnay, who's an actor, author, and coach. I know a lot of people that were involved in this movie, and it was filmed mostly up in West Virginia, but I'll tell you what, that movie blew me away, and Burt Reynolds was in it as well. Who has he coaches right here in Jupiter. For those that didn't know, he has a little studio where he does classes, master classes here in Jupiter, Florida, which is about an hour or so, more than that, north of where I am in Boca. So it's right here in kind of, I guess it's still South Florida, but it's the northern end of South Florida, for those that are not in Florida and don't know. But keep an eye out for that Hollow Creek movie, and Google it, because this movie is going to get a lot of attention. I can tell you that. I saw it up in West Palm Beach a few days ago, but it's a great film. Okay, guys, I think I've covered pretty much everything. And like I said on the last couple shows, the schedule's been a little bit more erratic than usual. Usually I have the show on Sundays, always. But because I'm in rehearsal for a film called Illume, which is coming out, a great anti-bullying movie, my schedule's been a little bit more erratic. And also with the film festival, it's more erratic because of that as well. So keep an eye on the Facebook page to see when my next show will be. I may have it next Sunday. I have a cruise next Sunday, so I'm not sure. but I may have it Sunday. So just check out the Facebook page to see exactly when the next show is. And also, it will be posted here on Blog Talk Radio as well. Okay, guys, thanks for tuning in, and I will talk to you then. Okay, bye-bye.